Good afternoon. My name is Dr. Vincent Gaddis from Benedictine University, and I'd like to spend the next few minutes sharing some of my thoughts and research that I have been doing on pedagogy and the question of teaching the Vietnam War, which I have submitted in my paper, Teaching Vietnam, Pedagogy and Historical Memory. In teaching the history of the Vietnam War, one area that pedagogically receives little attention is the topic of historical memory in the war. Most of us who teach on the war focus, quite rightly, on the early history of Vietnam, the era of colonization by the French, and the various, as Marilyn Young coined, Vietnam Wars. And in examining over 50 syllabi from universities all over the country, from liberal arts instruction universities to large public research institutions, it becomes clear that most of the courses are designed to teach about the American War, primarily up to 1975. Some syllabi indicate a reading and or class discussion on issues like PTSD and the struggle to build the Vietnam Memorial in Washington, D.C., some going as far to have readings on some of the critical issues facing Vietnam veterans and their health in regards to the long-term effects of the war, such as Agent Orange. The majority of readings that we find in these courses are excellent histories of the war, right? Prevalent is, of course, Herring's famous book, The 10,000 Day War, Marilyn Young's Vietnam Wars, Donald Moss's Vietnam and American Ordeal, Olson's Where the Domino Fell, all give outstanding analysis of the war, with Olson's latest edition in 2010 adding sections of the war in popular culture, which does begin to grapple with the historical memory from the perspective of the Vietnam War film in popular memory. But what is needed as we expand our pedagogical lens is to incorporate issues of return, tourism, and historical memory. Research into the area will allow us as practitioners to begin to get a glimpse into the questions surrounding return. If veterans return, why do they return? And how did they experience that return? In addition, how did they interact or how were they affected by the Vietnamese official narrative of the war and their own experience? And how did that return impact their historical memory of the war? And so what follows here is an entrance into that research in an attempt to understand the issues of historical memory. And as we understand that process, it behooves us as teachers of the Vietnam War to include research on historical memory, tourism, and the question of return. Now, the genesis of my thinking about this, I've been teaching the history of the Vietnam War since 1995. I had three uncles who served in the war. All were wounded. One suffered very significantly from PTSD, as well as Agent Orange. And so I had an opportunity in 2013 with eight other scholars to go to Vietnam as part of Asian Network's Faculty Enhancement Program. Asian Network caters to as a consortium of liberal arts institutions to promote Asian studies. And so while visiting in Vietnam in Da Nang at the Museum of Cham Sculpture, I ran into these two guys. And they were both had served in Vietnam. They were both part of the same artillery unit. And we started talking about, you know, these beautiful ancient sculptures. And I remarked that they looked around the age of those who served in Vietnam. They confirmed that they had. And I asked why they returned. And one of them, Rick, said that he wanted to return to the country he had previously only seen as part of an effort to destroy. He said, quote, "I wanted to see the history and beauty of this place since all I did was try to blow it up the last time I was here," unquote. He remarked, as the discussion deepened, we talked about if the experience had been healing for them. The person with Rick, we'll call him Tom, said that he had dealt with the war over the years and returning was difficult, but in the end was healing. And as I pressed the conversation, I discovered that both Tom and Rick had confined their visits to the museums like the Chom Sculpture Museum and the non-war themed museums, such as the Temple of Literature in Hanoi. And when I asked why, they agreed that their return was to what they said to focus on the now and the future. They weren't interested in reliving the war. And that really piqued my interest as I then thought about the narratives of the museums that were there in Vietnam and had seen the question of restoration or reconciliation of veterans with what Nick Turse describes in his book, Kill Anything That Moves, The Real American War in Vietnam, as genocide. So I came back, I started interviewing Vietnam veterans to find out, had they returned, had they not, when they returned, how did they deal with these museums and the narratives of those museums, and how did that affect the way that they think about the war? What we found was very interesting. Because when Vietnam, let's back up and talk about Vietnam, the country, in regards to tourism and opening up. So Vietnam initiated their policy of economic reforms, Doi Moi, in 1986, and their goal was to create a socialist-oriented market economy. State-controlled production was loosened, private enterprise was encouraged, collective agriculture eventually came to an end, and one of the important subsectors of the economy over the last 30 years has been tourism in Vietnam. In 2018, over 15 million international tourists visited the country, bringing in 337 trillion VND, or roughly 14 billion US dollars. Now, in a country with a GDP of roughly 223 billion US in 2017, international tourism represents about 6.5% of total GDP. Now, tourism is still finding its footing in Vietnam, but it's clearly growing at a rapid rate as the beauty of the country, the rich history of the culture and its people and its turbulent past draw backpackers to Sapa, international food connoisseurs to Ho Chi Minh City, lovers of Southeast Asian culture from the world over come to Vietnam. And one group of actual and potential tourists are American Vietnam War era veterans. Although obviously as we proceed through time, that group will begin to dwindle significantly. But their participation in the war makes travel to Vietnam a complicated decision. And so what I want to do here, or what I did in my research in this paper, is take an oral history approach to examine Vietnam veterans and why they chose to return to Vietnam, or why not. And the issues of return are, of course, complicated. For some by the narratives of the veterans when they arrive in Vietnam. And so the paper is divided into four sections with a conclusion. So let me just jump right into the first section, which are about the Vietnam museums. And again, pedagogically, if we want to talk about Vietnam, the Vietnam War, and talk about the aftermath of the war from a pedagogical perspective, is to teach our students about how Vietnam has presented the war to those visitors when they come versus how it is seen by other participants in the war, such as American Vietnam veterans. And when you go to Vietnam, it is very clear that the country has made the decision to take the American War as the centerpiece of Vietnam museum culture. And so several sites were visited while I was there and examined for this work, the Ho Chi Minh Museum, the Ho Lo Prison, the Hanoi Hilton, as it's called, the War Remembrance Museum, My Lai, and the Tunnels of Cu Chi. It is also a dominant narrative at museums, one might expect. Women's Museum, the American War is a centerpiece there. And an analysis of the museums and the narratives they promote and the stories of veterans helps us to understand why some return and whether the responses during the return of the veterans to Vietnam are influenced by those narratives, and if so, how. Museums in general, of course, construct the meaning of objects and a larger story through the purposeful selection and arrangement of objects for the viewer to encounter. Julia Blakeney argues that, quote, the collected objects facilitate the construction of narratives of the nation, which in turn instruct the shape of visitors' perceptions. And those objects specifically, and the narrative of the museums in general. The objects and narratives of the museums in Vietnam make the American War the central national narrative. So, for example, if you visit the National Women's Museum in Hanoi, right, what do you find? Everything is about the American War or French defeating the French. In the colonial war, the Viet Minh war, up to 1954. But what you don't see in a museum, a national museum dedicated to women, is anything that speaks to Trung Trac and Trung Nhi, who won Vietnamese independence in 40 to 43 AD against the Chinese. They're just not prominently mentioned in the museum. The focus is really that 1930 to 1975 time frame. And this is clear in the other museums. The Ho Chi Minh National Museum promotes the narrative of building Ho Chi Minh as a national symbol of Vietnamese leadership. The Cu Chi Tunnels, a War Memorial Park, presents visitors with a narrative of the sort of courageous, ingenious fighters of the National Liberation Front who outwitted and bravely took on the American invaders. The War Remnants Museum doesn't portray the valiant peasant warrior hero model as the Cu Chi Tunnels or the sort of narrative of the singular heroic symbol of Vietnamese nationalism, like the Ho Chi Minh Museum. The War Remnants Museum speaks to this narrative of the Vietnamese as the victims of a neo-colonial race war prosecuted by Americans with no regard for Vietnamese life. One of the rooms still is titled what the museum originally as constructed was titled the American War Crimes Room, used to be called the American War Crimes Museum. The Son Mai Memorial, the site of the My Lai Massacre, is another one. And here, instead of elevating a leader or a memorial park into a national symbol, the memorial's designers have built it to transcend national interest and really symbolizes the ideas of human solidarity, remembrance, peace, and reconciliation, which are all transnational values. And that is according to Roy Tamashiro on his work on Vietnamese museums. So with the tourism industry and this heavy focus on the American War. The question is, what about the return of Vietnam veterans, part two? So in the research, two categories emerge at the most surface level here, those who return and those who don't. Clearly the non-conventional tactics of the war, the really gruesomeness of the war, the unconventional nature of the war in terms of the heavy use of ambush and really a kind of asymmetrical warfare where there is no defined boundary of conflict, the huge use of booby traps with automatic weapons fire and so on, and sporadic sniper fire, not knowing who are combatants and who are not combatants, right? That trauma experienced by combat soldiers has been well documented, and PTSD as a condition continues to plague veterans. And we know that that is very difficult, but not all the veterans that I interviewed admitted to suffering from PTSD, but we must recognize that that given how widespread the condition, that it may be an underlying condition that influences the decisions and processes of determining if the veteran returns to Vietnam. A useful psychological category that widens the understanding of the war experience is to use Philip Natale's work with Vietnam veterans and his concept of moral injury. As Jonathan Shea argues, moral injury, quote, is what happens when there is a high stakes violation of what is right by someone holding legitimate authority in a high stakes situation. An alternate, more succinct definition is that moral injury is, quote, perpetrating, failing to prevent, bearing witness to, or learning about acts that transgress deeply held moral beliefs and expectations. And so I'm going to refer to PTSD in this article, and that diagnosis, if you will, comes through the interviews themselves. Yet I do think it's instructive to recognize in the voices of the vets, are there attempts to heal those moral injuries? Now, certainly group one are those who did not return. And many of them spoke about the idea of returning to Vietnam with disdain and bewilderment. One interviewee, Philip, said, "Return to Vietnam? Why? What would I do when I got there? I don't want to go back where I saw my youth stolen and my buddies killed. I don't want to go back to see what I did, what I had to do. Go back to Vietnam? What do you want me to do? Conjure ghosts?" Roger, said, "Go back to Vietnam? Hell no. I saw the most gruesome, bloody butchery of humans, and I've spent my life trying to deal with that. I was a ranger in Vietnam and saw a lot of things. I did a lot of things. I didn't read about it. I don't watch documentaries on it, and I definitely don't watch movies about it. No, it was the worst 2 years of my life, and I'll never go back." And this really is one of the ways that people really do viscerally say they don't want to go back. Now, for those who do return, the experience can be one of healing and reconciliation. And of course, there are two questions we have to explore in this regard. First, why do the veterans go back? And second, how do they react to the narratives being presented in any particular site? Many do return to find reconciliation. Bill Hutton, who served in the Marines in 1966, commented on his return in 2018, quote, "Quite honestly, it changes everything," unquote. "My perspective has done a complete 180 compared to how I felt a month, 2 months, 6 months, 6 years ago," he continued. "I figured that going back there would bring back all these memories that I've had for all these years, something that would probably just enlarge the problem and leave it ever more significant in my life." Yet after returning, he realized that the return to Vietnam was a healing moment for him. He went on to say, quote, I tell everybody now that I know that are Vietnam veterans that ask me about it, that have no other, I have no other recommendation but for them to go back and visit this area because it will give you a sense of relief, of release. Now, what about reacting to the narratives? One of the people I interviewed for this was a man, Mr. Paul Cox, founder of Vietnam, founder of Veterans for Peace, Chapter 69 in San Francisco. He organized a tour of Vietnam vets back to My Lai to in recognition of the 50th anniversary of the My Lai massacre in 2018. He's visited the country's a couple of other times. We discussed that 2018 trip and his reflections as a veteran and as a trip organizer and his observations of other vets visiting the museum sites. And it's important because from his perspective, you know, when talking about, for example, the Ho Chi Minh Museum, he sees it very much as understanding that they have their propaganda. This is a quote from him. That is a general whitewashing of some aspects of the war, like the Ho Lo prison, otherwise known as the Hanoi Hilton, where American pilots were held as prisoners of war. His observations of those two museums was that the narratives of the museums in many ways were discounted by veterans because of their knowledge, perception, of the history of the prison and the very well-known treatment of American prisoners by the Vietnamese army. In other words, we know that prisoners were tortured in the Ho Lo prison. And so the narrative that somehow only Vietnamese colonial warriors were viciously tortured, but American POWs were treated well, it just did not go over very well. That is not so much the case in other places like Quang Tri province, the most heavily bombed province in the war, and places like the Mine Action Center or Project Renew, both of which educate the communities on the removal of unexploded ordnance. And in that case, we have veterans when they come back who say that helping and serving in those positions, you know, according to Paul, quote, some who come back are anti-war, some come to the conclusion much later, and some when they left Vietnam the first time. And so the tour challenges the understanding of the veterans of what happened during the war. The VFP tour has a focus on education and understanding the legacies of the American war. And so the goal is to leave the veteran with a more nuanced view of the war, particularly when weighed against the legacies of unexploded ordnance or Agent Orange, for example. Lots of different responses come to about the War Remembrance Museum. David, who was a Green Beret in Vietnam in 1968, remarked upon visiting the museum, quote, when you look at the things we did, it's impossible not to feel guilty, unquote. He continued, quote, we are not really responsible. We were just 20 and we were following orders. We barely knew anything about life. But it is terrible, unquote. The documentary evidence in the museum is indisputable, but it did impact visiting vets in terms of them understanding the immediate and long-term impacts of the war, particularly the photographic displays of Agent Orange. As Paul Cox argued, quote, you cannot deny the tremendous suffering of the Vietnamese went through. The museum doesn't downplay the suffering or the heroism of the Vietnamese people, end quote. The courtyard of the museum with all of its military equipment from the war, also made the experience much more real for veterans who returned. For some, like Tyrone, an infantryman with the 101st Airborne in 69, said, quote, "It was a hard thing to really understand. We unleashed hell on them, and the whole thing, the amount of devastation, it really hit me hard, especially the AO and the bombing pictures. I didn't feel guilty, just sad, depressed, even that I was a part of killing. And I didn't know, you know, I didn't know why," unquote. And certainly I would think that Mili, in the interviews I did, was the most impactful. Yet for some, the 50th anniversary remembrance did not inspire reconciliation. The VFP, Veterans for Peace, took about 40 with them to the 50th anniversary remembrance, but the crowds, the speeches, and the section of survivors wearing all white on one side of the venue, the Americans on the other, put much more of a perception of suspicion into the air in the eyes of the veterans. VFP has done tours the last 7 years, and Mili is on the regular itinerary. And for one vet, the significance of the site was a realization of the horrors of atrocities committed by Americans and the NLF, as they realized that even if an individual soldier's unit did not commit atrocities, going to Mili made it real that these actions did in fact occur. For others who visited Mili, of the veterans I interviewed that went, other than 2018, right, and I'm not here making some kind of blanket condemnation of those events, but the reaction was not as deep and powerful as those who went it at another time. But those other vets that didn't go in 2018, Mili was a very powerful experience, even if they were not part of the massacre. David, who fought with the 24th Infantry near Ho Chi Minh City, visited Mili in 2015, said, quote, "It was a very raw experience for me. I hated seeing the photos, and now I can say Thompson, who flew the chopper that helped to end the massacre, was right. I truly felt sorry for people who went through that. It reminded me of just how terrible the war was, but it also helped me make peace with the war by going through and telling the guide, the air, the ghost, just how sorry I was." Now, what can we say about historical memory? The paper that I have has many more examples, but we don't have time for all of the examples. But those who visit museums do so as active creators of their own knowledge. And thus the narratives of the museums are part of a synthesis inside every visitor who creates their own interpretation of the museum and thus create another unique narrative based on their own subjectivity. And this is critical as we evaluate the narratives of those stories of vets as historical memory, which is defined as the way by which groups of people create and then identify with specific narratives about historical periods or events. Thus, the official state narratives of the museums create various aspects of the collective memory of the victors of the war. The Vietnamese as hero, as victim, as cunning warrior. The vets' encounters and reflections of the memorials and their experiences in the war reinterpret and extend the meaning of the war through the narratives of each veteran and the collective memory of the war from a U.S. veteran perspective. As Viet Thanh Nguyen says in his book, Nothing Ever Dies, quote, "War is always fought twice, on the battlefield and then again in the memory," unquote. In the long term, many of the veterans who returned did make peace with the war through their return. But on a closer examination, the vets did not point to any one museum or reaction to a state narrative as critical for closure to the war. Rather, it was the people they encountered, particularly the young, who made the reconciliation purposeful in their minds. Returning to Bill Hutton, who we spoke about earlier, he remarked in referring to speaking and interacting with children, quote, "That's where I got the closure of everything, thinking, hey, we did the right thing." He continued, "When you see the kids smiling like this and accepting us like this, the only thing I can think is that they really accepted that we were there and that we tried to do the best that we could for them." Now, this, of course, is only one example of historical memory, but I want to dwell on this just for a moment. Hutton gained closure, yet his now reconstructed view of the war, his historical memory, leads to the conclusion of justification of the horror of the war based on the present-day reality of Vietnam, in which he's seen as a tourist, not as an enemy soldier. And thus his acceptance by the Vietnamese, a generation after the war, a population that is 60% under the age of 40, has in essence allowed Hutton to then conclude that the contemporary Vietnam was born from the horror of the war, and therefore his actions of the war are now understood as justified and therefore able to serve as the happy ending, if you will, of the memory to then soothe the reality of the war of the past. This is the deep irony of historical memory. It allows the present to shape and reshape the actuality of the past in a way that then serves to produce a narrative more conducive to, in this case, reconciling the moral injury of the war. Let me conclude with one more veteran. Jorge Aspieta, who served in Da Nang during two tours in Vietnam between 68 and 70, said his most important takeaway from his trip back to Vietnam where he fought was, again, the contemporary Vietnamese culture. He said, quote, "I tell people that the Vietnamese people have suffered incredible losses, incredible personal sacrifices because of the war, and you would think that after what they went through, that they would hate us. Instead, I was warmly received and respected in their country. That act of human kindness is deeply rooted within me and has impacted me profoundly. I feel better about myself and sleep better." He concluded, "It was an incredible trip that has deeply touched my life." Aspieta underscored that since returning to Vietnam and having the experience of revisiting war sites and seeing the contemporary Vietnam and the warmth and welcoming of the people, a deeply rooted part of the culture, he has had fewer PTSD symptoms, particularly nightmares. In some way, then, the moral trauma of the war experience was mitigated by the act of return and the narrative of reconciliation. Again, not just revisiting the war sites or the tension of the state's narratives about the war in relation to his own narrative of the war was enough to bring closure, but rather his experience as a particular category of tourist made the reconciliation possible. It was his interaction with the people at cafes, shopping, seeing contemporary sites or other forms of art and culture such as the Cham ruins that brought the final piece of closure to his historical memory. The beauty of contemporary Vietnam, its people, its physical beauty, became the salve that Aspieta used to complete his memory of the war with an understanding that his actions as a soldier are now seen as a collective forgiveness by the Vietnamese and thus him the relief he now, and gives him the relief he now enjoys. Now, I'm not arguing here that veterans who do not return cannot come to a place of closure and healing. What I am arguing is that the anecdotal evidence here suggests that return to Vietnam and interacting with the people and culture of Vietnam can be a powerful way for veterans to bring a sense of inner peace, healing, and reconciliation. Thus, vets who have made the choice to not return may never reach the type of powerful catharsis of many returnees, not because the facts of the war have changed, but rather because the tourist experience provides a deeper encounter with contemporary Vietnam that impacts the historical narrative, the historical memory. Now, this is not a universal occurrence, but in the publicized and other sources of return, including the interviews I have included and conducted, return does modify the memory and thus creates a new knowledge. And in that way, gives power to the veteran to create his narrative of the war. Whether it be accurate or not, historically, is no longer the issue. He has fought the war in his memory, and here, at least, for some, comes peace. And so for us as practitioners of teaching the Vietnam War experience, our pedagogy needs to reflect this idea of historical memory and how those veterans who we spent so much time teaching about their actions during the war, we need to also include in our teaching of this course about Vietnam, we need to also include how do we incorporate this understanding of the veterans themselves, their historical memory, and their return to Vietnam in these years after Doi Moi. How do we include that, and how does that shape the way that we also teach the Vietnam War? I want to thank you for listening to my presentation, and I look forward to your feedback. Thank you very much.